Okay, good afternoon. This is the hearing requested by Attorney Bradley Hochberg in response to the order to show cause issued in docket number 14-80083, an order to show cause why respondent Hochberg should not be sanctioned in an amount not more than $5,000, suspended or disbarred for violations of rules and orders that set forth in the June 12, 2014 order to show cause. All right. So, Mr. Hochberg, I just want to let you know that this hearing is being recorded. So, in the event that there's any need for a record, that can be produced or made available. And I also want you to know that you're entitled to be represented by counsel. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
And you're choosing to represent yourself?
Yes, sir.
All right. Although this is a relatively small courtroom, the acoustics are not great. So it would be helpful to me if you would come up to the podium, and in order to get a recording, speak into the microphone that's there. And because I'm going to be asking you a number of questions about the assertions in the order to show cause, and I may have questions prompted by your presentation, I'd like to begin by having my courtroom deputy swear you in.
Yes, I do.
Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y, Hochberg, H-O-C-H-B-E-R-G.
All right. Okay. I'm happy to provide you with whatever time you need to present your case here. I do want to assure you that I have carefully reviewed your response to the order to show cause, and I have tried to review the history of your performance since that time, so I'm prepared to hear about that and ask you questions. But I do want to relieve you of the burden of having to reiterate matter that you've included in that submission.
Well, yeah, because that's why. Oh, may I speak?
Yes.
Okay. That's why I wanted to stand mostly with what I've wrote as the response, but then to briefly, well, to speak about myself, and then also my performance since then. I did wish to address that.
I would like to begin by asking you to give me a little bit of your background, beginning with your education. And what college did you attend?
I graduated from University of California, Irvine.
Okay.
Back in 1988.
You go ahead.
Okay. I'm just about as nervous as can be, as I was stating to your clerk. I've never been this nervous for my bar exam nor for arguing my first case in court. So, and as they say, when you represent yourself, we all know what you have for a client. Now I can understand that, but I'm trying best to go forward and be as honest as possible. I then attended, starting in 1989, Whittier College School of Law.
Okay.
I graduated Whittier College School of Law in 1992. I then became an attorney in California in, I think it was March 21st, 1994. I was sworn into this particular court. I believe it was in April. I know it says here April 18th. It was by Judge Pregerson of this court himself. Then I went in, I think it was May 5th, May 17, 1994, I started work for the United States Small Business Administration as a, I guess you would say, as an attorney advisor, which lasted until, that was in Sacramento through their disaster relief organization, or branch, so we say. It was supposed to be a temporary job because of the need for the earthquake. That job ended not because I was fired or terminated. It was just, as I said, that there was no need anymore because they started out with five attorneys, and by the time they hired everyone, it was 180 attorneys. It was, they said, the largest law firm pretty much in California, and that was based in Sacramento. So the job lasted until, I believe it was August 22nd, 1995. Now, in, I believe it was December 4th of 1995, I basically, to learn the type of law that I wanted to do, which was, at the time, criminal and family law, I basically just about volunteered for another attorney for almost an entire year of not being paid, but doing upwards of 700 appearances in court, sometimes as average of 15, sometimes as high as even 20. But I was young then. At the time, I was 32. So I had a lot more energy and a lot more desire. Now, this was in the low-income community of the east side of Los Angeles, a very Hispanic community, which is, my family's roots are from the east side of Los Angeles, although I did not grow up there. And by the time I came there in 95, the neighborhood had certainly changed. There was nobody left from that would have been, you know, that we would have known. Okay.
Well, what was the name of the attorney you worked with?
Oh, Gustavo Barcena. He was a certified criminal law specialist. And I either was not paid by him or paid at most $200 a week by him. But as he put it this way, he said, I may not be able to pay you much, but that I can feed you and train you. So I got lunches, so we say. But I was happy because I was appearing in court. I was arguing cases. I was learning the law from the ground up. And I learned to like being a litigator on the, I don't want to say I'm not ashamed of being a litigator on the lowest level, but one has to, I guess, go with what they love and where their strengths lie. And my love and strengths lie on being a litigator on the lowest level. I may not make myself into the newspapers. I may not make new law, but I enjoy, and I still do, enjoy what I love. So about 1 year later, I would say January of 97, I opened my own office in the same area of East Los Angeles, where I am still in the same office that I have been in since then. I didn't know whether I would last or not, so as my father had said, because they wanted me to sign a year lease. My father says, well, sign a six-month lease. You don't know if you're going to be there. Well, all these years later, I'm still there. Again, my practice has been criminal, family, and then as the needs of my clients in the area, because it is a almost 100% Hispanic area, I tend to cater to their needs, which was criminal, family, some landlord-tenant law, and then, of course, with that community, there's a need for immigration lawyers. And so as the years went on, I started taking on some immigration cases, but on the lower level, as in the lowest level of immigration court, not necessarily appeals. In fact, even with family and criminal, I've done very few state appellate cases. I have not admittedly done a whole lot because, as I said, my strengths and my knowledge and my love is more on the, not to say to argue in the trenches, but that is where, not to say that there's nothing for being in the Ninth Circuit, but I feel that my strengths lie with the people on the lowest level. But what happened is on these cases is that some of these clients, they came to me because, again, they can't afford, a lot of my clients, whether it's even on the lowest level, family, criminal, a lot of them, they would qualify for a public defender in, that is criminal. Or in family, they can't afford an attorney. So what happens is they come to me because I've been in the area so long, and they come to me, they ask me for my help. I have trouble turning these people down. So as a result, my family, I don't want to say we're going hungry by no means, but as a result, I can't afford some of the things for my family that I would like. I drive a Honda Civic. I don't drive a Mercedes-Benz or a nice car, although I wish I would. Sometimes I think that by this age of 51 years old, and being an attorney for as long as I have, I sometimes wonder, what do I have to show for it? But I do have a lot of grateful clients. Now, as for the appellate work, what happened is a number of very desperate people came to me, and I didn't realize at the time to the full extent of what appellate cases would entail, because certainly it's very easy to file, admittedly, it's very easy to file a petition for review and ask for a stay. It takes very little time, but one doesn't think what entails after that, which is the full appellate process, especially on the Ninth Circuit, which require a brief. Now, since this order to show cause, although I have missed deadlines, I have filed 4 briefs since. And I have filed 4 briefs since that I believe are competent. That's one thing about this process I will say, is I'm not going to say glibly, like, oh, I'm happy it happened, because obviously I don't wish this kind of stress on anyone, the lack of sleep, the overeating, the high blood pressure. But what it did do for me is it made me realize that where my strengths and where my weaknesses lie. And yes, it did make me learn the law. As I stated, I filed 4 briefs that I believe have a good chance at working out. But what it taught me was is that in my limited, because I guess going back to my practices, I am a solo practitioner. I do not have even money to have a receptionist. I answer my own phones. I am available as long as my phone, as long as I'm not asleep, I am there for my clients to pick up the phone on weekends, on wherever, at night. So I don't have a secretary. So a lot of it I have to do myself, my own paperwork. But on the lowest level, I know how to do that, and I'm good at it. But on the appellate level, I didn't realize the extent that it took. So as I was saying was, although it taught me appellate law with these 4 briefs that I submitted, the problem is that even doing these briefs, the amount of time and energy that goes into them would make it so that the rest of my clients on the lower levels of the court system would, I would not be able to serve them. So much time went into these that I have to decide that where my strengths lie and where my weaknesses lie. And there is no shame in being a lawyer on the lower level. Now, as for all of the rules that I broke, yes, I did break many a number of rules. I am not denying that. I am not denying, but I will deny all the way. I did not file these cases with an evil intent or an intent to delay processes. As my response says, that I honestly believed that these people had a chance, and they were, in some cases, were very desperate. And I want to be able to go on serving the community, but I do realize that my strengths do not lie in the appellate level. However, and I don't wish to resign from the Ninth Circuit, but I want to see these cases through, the ones that I filed briefs on, because they're the only ones left, and I want to be able to see them through. But I do not, it's not my idea to take on any further cases, because as I stated, I don't have the time and the energy or whatever to do these, because it would just basically bankrupt my cases and bankrupt everyone's time. If the court would like to ask me some questions, or if there's anything more I can, I've never been sanctioned by any court in my 20-odd years of being an attorney. So, I don't wish to be suspended. Whatever was done because, as I said, that I got involved in these cases. If I had left these cases and told the client that they had to find another attorney, I'm just someone who generally tries to see these things through. I don't, because they cannot afford another attorney. But I have since not taken any further Ninth Circuit cases, not because of necessarily of messing up, but as I stated, I realize where my strengths and my weaknesses and where my love lies. And I don't want you to get mad that I don't want to be an appellate attorney, but it's just not where my strengths and where my love lies. Did the court wish to hear anything else?
Well, I have an observation. I appreciate your candor, and I fully believe that the skills to be a good trial court litigator are a separate set of skills from those required to be a good appellate court litigator. One, you're standing on your feet arguing. You have to balance all kinds of things that come at you like that in terms of rolling with punches and being able to make oral presentation in the trial court. In the Court of Appeals, it's much more contemplative. You have to carefully think through things, put in a lot of time thinking, writing, analyzing, strategizing. It's a different skill set. So I think it is understandable, and I think laudable for you to come here and say that your skill lies where your passion is, and that's where you want to focus your practice.
And I'm being very truthful to them. Nobody prepped me with this to say, oh, say this. I mean, I'm being very truthful, and I hope the court understands that.
Well, I haven't seen you in trial court, but having taken a look at the work that you've done here, and even your response to the order to show cause, suggests to me that your strength does not lie as an appellate litigator. Just in terms of expressing ideas clearly and persuasively in writing, organized neatly, with using good expressive strategy, good grammar, proofreading, all those kinds of things. I don't see that in your written work here. And I think what I'm hearing from you is that you acknowledge that that's not where your strength lies.
Absolutely. I cannot deny that.
All right. If I was going to recommend that you be allowed to continue to practice, I would do so only on the condition that you spend an enormous amount of time in taking continuing education programs, on appellate practice, on all that kind of stuff. But what I'm hearing you saying is you don't really want to be an appellate practitioner.
I don't want to, as I stated, I don't wish to be in bad standing with this court. As I stated, I'm not resigning. But it's not my intention to be an appellate lawyer. But certainly taking continuing education classes would certainly help my skills, even on the lower level, because, I mean, I'm not saying that some of what you learn on the appellate level, you can certainly apply on the lower level. The idea of writing a good, because there are times when I do have to write. I mean, it's not just all arguing off the cuff. I have to write, even for my family law, for immigration, whatever. I have to write, or criminal. I have to write briefs. I mean, it's something that I do, and it's certainly something that I could learn from. Whether I choose to continue, I don't want to make appellate law, at least maybe I will after taking these classes, maybe I will develop a love of it because I'll see that it's easier. All I know is it's been very tough, and without these classes that you were talking about, it's been next to impossible and very overwhelming. So I'm not saying that these classes wouldn't help, even on the lower level.
Well, so now I'm getting kind of a mixed message from you. I thought you said earlier that your future intention is to not to do appellate work.
I don't wish
to focus on your trial court practice.
I do not wish to do appellate level work. I was just merely stating if the court wanted to order me to take classes, I would have no problem taking classes, and that they would probably be helpful for me on the lower level.
Well, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to let you decide what you need to do. I think you're right that taking classes in appellate practice and brief writing, analytic thinking kinds of exercises, practical exercises would be helpful at any level. But my concern in making a recommendation here is what I could recommend to rehabilitate you to the point where I could recommend that the court allow you to continue practicing in the Ninth Circuit. So if I, what I'm looking for is a solution here that will accommodate your needs and interests, and also accommodate what I see as the interests of the Ninth Circuit. Now, you know, up to now, what the Ninth Circuit has had is a lot of resources being devoted to monitoring Bradley Hochberg.
Yes, I understand that.
And that I don't want that to happen. Now, if you're coming here and telling me I'm not going to come to this court anymore, that leads me in one direction about what my recommendation is. If you say to the court that I'm not going to file any more petitions for review in this court, period. But you know what happens when you get that call at 2 a.m. From your client at the airport?
That is not going to. I am not taking any more Ninth Circuit cases. However, I don't wish, as I stated, I don't wish to be suspended. If the court feels that to protect the court or the community, it wishes me to take these classes, but I do not wish to be suspended, so that if I have to take whatever courses the court would like, I would do that, but it is not my intention at all to take any more Ninth Circuit cases. I hope that doesn't anger you, that I don't want to take Ninth Circuit.
It relieves me.
But I do not, and I reiterate that.
All right. So let me ask you this question: What if I were to suggest to you that one remedy here would be for you to voluntarily withdraw from the Ninth Circuit bar?
If the court wanted me to do that, I would do that. It's not my idea to do that, but I would do that if that's what the court would like. But I would also like to see the four cases I have going with briefs. There is nothing further to do on those cases but to await decisions, and I would like to see those cases through so that it doesn't throw everything into a jumble.
Right. I understand that. That doesn't
strike. I don't want to hurt these clients by doing that.
I don't see that that's unreasonable. Let me ask you some specific questions about the cases before we return to this question of the appropriate remedy here.
I believe you were mentioning the one at the call at the airport. Maybe you want to know about that. Although it's in
well,
there.
Yes, that's the what De Fonseca Silva petition.
No, that's not the the call at the airport. The late night one was Yanku.
Okay, so I don't have any question about Yanku.
Okay.
I do have a question about
on the Yanku one, that's one of the most, I don't want to say egregious mistakes of mine, but that is something that's pretty clear. And again, I'm falling on my own sword, but you didn't bring it up, but I'm bringing it up in full candor.
Right. Well, I did, as I said at the outset, I read your statement. You said right at the beginning of your discussion at that court, you realized that it shouldn't have been filed in the Ninth Circuit. It should
yes.
have been a habeas petition in district court. So fine. But in the De Fonseca Silva, I thought that also involved a flight. That was one to Portugal. Maybe it wasn't at the airport. But anyway, let me ask you this question. In those petitions, I was a little bit at a loss to understand from your response to the order to show cause why you believed that there was jurisdiction in this court.
May I review my response?
Yeah, that was the one where your
oh no, I know the client. I just wanted
Portugal.
To look to see my particular response on that. I do know the client.
And in particular, where there is jurisdiction, because this court's jurisdiction is limited to reviewing specific BIA orders.
Yes.
And not only is there a requirement that there be an order that's reviewable,
yes.
but also it has to be, review has to be sought within a specific amount of time.
Yes. Oh, and actually, to digress, I didn't state about, but the court's already seen it in my response regarding my parents and the situations that they were under, and my father ultimately dying, and my mother, who's 88, that I've had to be the sole, not caretaker, as in she does live on her own, but I'm the sole person that's responsible for keeping an eye on her. That was a lot of what went on here also. But to go back to, I just want to review my response for a second. I guess the only thing I can say is that again, whether it's falling on my sword, it's that I guess at the time I did not have his entire file with me, as it basically states, that I didn't handle his case on the lower court level, and I guess that, you know, having learned now what one can do and one can't do, and I guess I must have to say, like the call at 2 a.m, I basically to say the word shot first and ask questions later. I mean, I don't know what more I can say other than to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I that's all I want you to do. There were a number of cases where you either you lost touch with their client, you were thinking that the case should probably be dismissed, but
I couldn't get a hold of them.
So did you ever consider filing a motion to withdraw as counsel in any of those cases?
That's I could even talk about that on the lower level. Sadly, on the lower level, I don't usually lose contact with clients, but I do have conflicts with clients. And I haven't generally filed motions to withdraw on cases, even on the lower court level, but it's something that I now obviously realize that if I can't get a hold of my client, I can't sit there and hurt myself to protect these clients. I cannot do that, so that if I can't dismiss it because I haven't gotten a hold of them, but to let the case sit there and make extra work for the Ninth Circuit is not good either. So I realized that I should have attempted in those cases to properly file a motion to withdraw.
All right. Can you fill me in on what happened in the Alba Heredia case? There was a stay of removal. You obtained an extension of time to file the opening brief, and yet it's now 8 months later.
It has been filed, but albeit it was filed within the last day or two. It's one of those four briefs that were filed, three of which were filed within the last couple days. I know that your clerk is aware of it because I spoke with him about it before.
So what happened? What caused that delay?
Let me see. Just one.
There was a stay of removal granted, because the government did not timely object. And then you got an extension of time to file the brief. And then the case was apparently dismissed for failure to prosecute, by failure to file a brief. And then
yes,
quite a bit of time elapsed. And now so what went on?
Well, again, some of that had to do with, as I stated in my response. May I review my response briefly?
I don't think you talk about this case in your response. So I didn't see that anywhere, the Alba Heredia case. But if I missed it, you can let me know.
Well, I'd like to at least try to look for them in case. It would appear, as the court has stated, that it does not appear to be in there. So the best that I can say regarding that, again, I guess that it was one of those ones that between my practice, solo practice, between caring for my parents and their needs, it did slip through the cracks. I'm not going to try to come up with some glib response as to why that happened. But I have rectified the situation, and the brief has been filed along with the proper motions in that case, and that I would like to see that through.
All right. And Garcia Trinidad, that was the case where your client was seeking to secure a U visa. And I was curious about what was the basis for seeking a U visa in the Garcia Trinidad case.
Let me see. Can I review my response briefly?
Yes. I don't think it says.
No, it just states. I believe it just states that he was seeking it. That he was the victim of a crime, and that we were trying to, I was trying to seek a U visa on his behalf.
Is this something that the petitioner seeks, or is it something that the government seeks?
On a U visa, there's a process, one of which is you go to the district attorney or the local police department where he was the victim of that crime, and you seek some kind of statement from them certifying that, in fact, that he's a victim of the crime, a victim of a crime, and that they recommend, you know, they make a recommendation on whether they feel that he should be granted the U visa. Then the government, then you petition the U.S. government for, because a U visa is a limited visa that's only granted, there's only so many of them granted per year to victims. It's like a special type of visa that's granted to crime victims. So in his case, he had been the victim of a crime. But sometimes that when the problem that I'll encounter is that when the client has a criminal record himself, the local police department, they don't always feel so inclined to help this one-time victim out when they may have a criminal record. And then the next level being the immigration. Again, someone, they'll weigh the positives and the negatives and say, well, it really should go to someone who has more of a clean record.
So what's the current status of the petition for review in that case?
Let me see. I believe that, let me just take a look at my response. To my knowledge, that the case has been dismissed by the Ninth Circuit.
I don't think that's correct. And do you have the docket in that, Garcia Trinidad?
Because I think that's I don't want to say one of the charges against me, but I believe that was one of the concerns the court had, was that the petition was dismissed for failure to prosecute.
Yeah, I'm going to spend just a moment and take a look at the docket, because my belief is that it's still pending.
I believe it was, I want to say it was dismissed on March 18, 2014. At least that's what I believe.
Hmm? Yeah, do you have it up there? Okay. Yeah, I think I can get it.
Is that an iPad?
It is.
Okay, the last entry in this matter, the last public entry, is an order filed June 10th of last year, 2014. It says, on August 22nd, 2013, and again on October 7th, 2013, and November 13th, 2013, the court ordered petitioner to file a motion to proceed in the form of pauperis or pay the filing fees for this petition for review. On January 13th, 2014, it's almost a year ago, the court dismissed this petition for review for failure to prosecute after petitioner failed to comply with the court's orders. On February 5th, 2014, petitioner filed a motion to proceed in formal pauperis and an emergency motion to reinstate the petition for review and temporary stay of review of removal. Also on February 5th, the court granted petitioner's emergency motion to reinstate and ordered petitioner within 21 days to submit a completed Form 4 financial affidavit in support of the motion to proceed in form of pauperis. The original submission was lacking. When petitioner failed to respond to the February 5th order, the court again on March 18th provided petitioner with a sua sponte extension of time to submit a Form 4 financial affidavit. Despite these multiple extensions of time, petitioner to date has not submitted a financial affidavit in support of the motion to proceed in form of pauperis. Accordingly, petitioner's motion to proceed in form of pauperis is denied for failure to demonstrate indigence. Within 21 days after the date of this order, petitioner shall pay $450 to this court. Otherwise, the petitioner will be dismissed by the court for failure to prosecute. The court notes that petitioner is represented by counsel Bradley Hochberg and that petitioner also has not complied with the court's August 22nd, October 7th, and November 13th orders directing petitioner to inform the court as to whether petitioner is the beneficiary of an approved U visa application, and if so, whether petitioner contends that the court should hold proceedings in abeyance pending disposition of the U visa application.
Now, my client, I believe, was removed by the immigration, and he reentered, and he was put into custody. I believe it was in a criminal proceedings, which I was not representing him, and that I did send him the Form 4, which was at where he was being held, and that he did not return it back to me.
Okay, this case is still pending in the court.
Okay. Then I would have to do a motion to be relieved. Which I will gladly do.
So you have four cases plus this one.
Yes, you are correct. I have four cases plus this one. The case is being... Yes, exactly. That is...
Oh, yes.
That makes five... I guess that makes six now.
Right.
From four to six. But I will gladly file a motion to withdraw on that one. Now that I know that it's still pending.
So in the order to show cause, with respect to Castro, the order to show cause stated that the opening brief you filed was badly written and did not cite to the record.
Yes, I do understand that. I have since produced four briefs on other cases that not only comply with the law, but I believe will actually, I hope, in result in my client prevailing. In Castro, you know, I'm before this court, and it's gone to a point where I don't know, you know, I mean, my client is okay with what I produced, but I understand that there are it's badly defective.
Okay. Are you intending to file a reply brief in that case?
Yes, I am. I would like to.
Okay. I think there's... Did you seek an extension of time?
I did, and I believe that time has passed.
All right. So...
I was busy with the four other ones that I had to deal with. But yes...
So what is your intention now on that reply brief?
It would be to ask for an extension to prepare a reply brief on that one. But if the court didn't wish to do that, I would be fine. You know, if the court wishes not to, that's fine too.
Well, the court wishes that justice be done in the cases before it, and if it's appropriate to file a reply brief, the court would like to see a reply brief.
I believe in this matter it probably would be the right thing to do. In the four other cases with briefs, I believe my brief is good enough that it does not need to have a reply brief.
Okay. So let's return to our discussion of what is an appropriate remedy here. So I think it's understandable that you want to continue in these cases. I think there's a basis for allowing that. I also think it's a good idea for you not to practice in the Ninth Circuit after that.
And that would be you're suggesting it as a voluntary.
I would suggest that as a voluntary resignation from the bar of the Ninth Circuit.
And I would definitely agree with the court.
All right. So what I'm going to need to do is figure out a way to make a recommendation that will allow you to continue representing, but also require you to withdraw after that. Because it's unclear when these cases are going to be heard. What I am contemplating right now is issuing an order to you to file status reports with the court, updating us periodically on the status of those cases, and then with reminding you of your obligation to voluntarily withdraw from the court. Now, if we do it this way, I don't see that there will be any collateral consequences to you. So you'll be able to continue practicing at the, you call it the lowest level, I consider it the first level.
Or in the trenches, as some people would say.
The trenches, yeah, but that's our first defenders against threats to our liberty and freedom is maybe the best way to think of it. But if we do it this way, it won't have any collateral consequences, as opposed to your resigning with charges pending. If I were to do it that way, with charges pending, that order would be served on other bars and might have
very
adverse
collateral
consequences. Right. So my sense is that that I will try and structure an order along those lines. And then ultimately, at the point at which you resign, I will recommend that the matter be closed.
That would be fine.
Now, I also expect you promptly to deal with the two matters that we've identified, the reply brief, the extension of time, and it was one of the thing we had identified.
Yes.
That you need to do pronto.
Now, would the court, again, my understanding of appellate law is not as good as yours are. Would it be better for me to prepare a reply brief, then do a motion to have that submitted, or to ask for the extension first? How would the court like to see me do that? I don't want to get myself in any further trouble.
I think it would be probably more efficient for you to prepare the brief and file it with a motion for leave to file it late.
That That would be fine. I just wanted to make clear so I don't make any further missteps.
No.
And as for the other case, if after speaking with my client and we deem it best to just voluntarily dismiss that case, then that's what I will do also.
All right. Or
file a motion to withdraw.
Right. Okay. How much time do you request to comply with those two matters?
I would ask for, I believe, 90 days.
How about 30 days?
Again, I know I'm not in the used car business here about splitting it, but could I at least have 60 days?
60 days to submit a brief and to resolve your representation of the Garcia
Trinidad case. Yes, either by a motion to withdraw or by a voluntary dismissal.
All right. And I'm going to set up a schedule that will require periodic reports from you.
Yes.
And I caution you to comply with the deadlines for those reports.
Because yes.
If you miss those, we may just go to a more drastic solution.
Now, what would be the content or the format? So, again, I don't get myself in any trouble. Is there any kind of format that I can go off of when you talk about reports?
I'll issue an order requiring you to issue a status report on the status of each of the cases that are currently pending. You'll report back, and then you will after the last case is resolved in this court, you will submit your voluntary resignation.
And how do I do that so I know, or is that something I just ask the clerk's
office? You can just file a motion with the court in this docket number that simply says, I, Bradley Hochberg, I think all you would need to do is a motion that you hereby voluntarily resign from the bar of the Ninth Circuit.
And that's without charges, obviously, pending.
You just say that, and we'll remove you.
And I don't use this case number. I just ask the clerk to take my name off of the rolls.
This case. You file it in this case.
Oh, I do. Okay.
Now, I do want to also tell you that what my role in this matter is to prepare a report and recommendation to the court.
Yes.
And what I will do at the end of this time and after your submit your resignation, I will explain the steps that occurred in this. Based upon your representation that you were going to file no further petitions for review, which is also going to be in my order, and that allowed you to complete the representation of those cases with the understanding that you would no longer practice in the court thereafter.
Yes.
I will then recommend to the court that no further action is necessary in this case.
Yes.
So I think there's a good likelihood that the court will adopt that recommendation and won't do anything more than that.
Yes.
But I can't guarantee that.
Yes.
It's I see it as being very unlikely that they would do anything other than accept that recommendation.
Yes.
Do you understand
yes,
that?
Yes, I do.
All right. So I'm now going to issue an order after this hearing that forbids you from filing any more petitions for review in the Ninth Circuit.
That would be fine.
All right. Okay. there anything further that you wish to bring to my attention or anything? All right. Well, I appreciate your being here, and I do appreciate your candor. And I think that the resolution here is good. It's going to allow you to go forward with your life and do, and as you pointed out, do the things that you are best at and capable of. And we'll end this the stress of hell.
As it has been since Friday the 13th of June when I received the papers. Yes.
A notable day. All right. Well, with that being said, this matter is then submitted pending the issuance of an order and, as stated, the further
I don't need to resolution. Wait for such order. I'm assuming it's electronically.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll come to you. No, not today. We'll
yes,
get
thank
it to you.
You
forthwith, as they say.
Thank you.
So the main thing that you need to know is not file any more petitions.
I will not be filing any more.
All right.